Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, Spectator's daily and sometimes more than daily politics podcast. I'm John Connolly and I'm joined today by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. Now, the starting guns have fired on the election campaign after Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn launched his campaign at an event in Battersea this morning. In a sign that the Labour leader wanted to make this election about rallying against the elites, he said he promised to rebuild public services and hit out at tax dodgy landlords, bad bosses and big polluters. Now, James, how similar does all this sound to Corbyn's election in 2017? Are Labour basically trying to repeat what they did last time but do a little bit better?
Yeah, there is definitely a similarity. The attack on the rigged system, you pick a few figures who aren't exactly popular and you go after them. I thought the interesting addition to it is the attack on the idea that Boris Johnson is going to sell the NHS to Donald Trump, obviously. And is it interesting to see whether that resonates or not? I mean, I don't see what possible evidence there is for this charge, but I think that their aim, I think, will be to try and kind of use it as a way to kind of push the NHS into a conversation, attach it to a Trump bogeyman. So kind of watch to see whether that can succeed or not. And also watch to see this, which is that whether the Corbyn answer on Brexit hurts him. He was asked directly which way he would vote in this second referendum that Labour won on Brexit, and he wouldn't answer. And the question is, does that prevent, essentially, Labour benefiting from pro-Remain tactical voting, or do Liberal Democrat and Remain voters in Labour Tory marginals put the clothes peg on their nose and work out that the only way to stop Brexit from going through is to vote Labour in those seats? So I think those are the things to watch for from the Corbyn launch today.
And on the NHS case, we've seen quite unusually Boris Johnson and the Conservatives focus very much on this as a campaign topic. It's traditionally a very much a Labour topic. Do you think they're going to have any success fighting Labour on that turf?
Well, I think there's a view that the NHS is such a big issue. It's such a so high up on voter concerns that you can't just ignore it. And even if Labour go in with the lead in terms of trustworthiness on the NHS, and I think there are polls that suggest the Tories are edging forward on this, you still need to be in the conversation. To not be in the conversation on the NHS is to ultimately hand your opponent a big boost to begin with. I think it's interesting that Dominic Cummings, who is Boris Johnson's senior aide, he's reported as previously saying before he was in government, you know, lots of people do think that Tory MPs don't care about the NHS. I think that if you look at Vote Leave, which he ran the campaign for, and what's happened in Downing Street since Boris Johnson has been there, they clearly think that the way to counter this is to actually put it front and centre. Now, and that means a repeated message. So I think if you look at what Boris Johnson is doing today, but also what he'll probably be doing for a lot of the campaign, hospital visits. And yes, he has done many of these already. And there was, I think, at least one incident where there was an angry parent who later was, and there was also a Labour activist, but an angry parent confronting him. Now, I mean, oh, this was a disastrous outing for Boris Johnson. I don't think this is how it is viewed from Downing Street. I think that ultimately they think that if you can get on like the news at 6, the news at 10, rolling stream of Boris Johnson walking around a hospital, that is ultimately a win. They want the Prime Minister to be associated with hospitals. I think the issue for them is in terms of all the funding they put in, Theresa May and the 20 billion, I think there was a sense in the Tory party they didn't get that much thanks for it. You've seen with Boris Johnson, they're trying to, when they talk about the NHS, they're trying to move away from just these large figures. I think there's a view that there's not that much difference between saying you're going to spend 500 million on something and 10 billion, just because most people can't quantify what that is. Once you get to a certain level of spending, it just sounds like a lot of money. So what they want to do instead is talk about, this is going to create this many new hospitals, this much extra staff. So I think you will see a push there in terms of how effective it's going to be. I think it's quite clear from Prime Minister's questions yesterday, quite clear from the launch at Labour today, that they do think trying to tie up the NHS with this US trade deal is going to be effective for them because they can move forward to the privatisation. And I think that this is something that in CCHQ, they also expect to be a big push on Labour's social media attack campaign, the kind of thing that could be easily shared. So I do think the Tories are going to have to come up with some different responses to it. They can, of course, say it's rubbish. We've said it repeated times. This is not the subject of this trade deal. But I think they, as the campaign goes on, I can imagine a situation where they might have to talk more about, well, that's not for the trade deal. what is for the trade deal? You know, I think that you might have to further your answers.
And remember, Donald Trump will be turning up in London for the NATO summit. Just about, I think it's about a week out or 10 days out from polling day.
A very welcome visitor for Boris Johnson, I suspect. Now, James, I realise you can probably read into these things a bit too much, but do you think there's any significance that this Labour event was launched in Battersea in London? Do you think there's a sort of an acknowledgement from Labour that they might be worried about a Lib Dem surge there and particularly Remain voting areas?
Yeah, I mean, everyone is fighting, both Labour and the Tories are fighting this election on multiple fronts. So Labour not only have to try and defend their seats in the West Midlands and the North East from the Tories, but they also have to kind of hold off the Lib Dems in these more heavily Remain areas. I think if you look, there's a, Twitter is not Britain and all that, but there's a furious row on Twitter right now about tactical voting. Lots of Labour people are getting very upset about the number of places where Best for Britain, which is a pro-Remain campaign group, is urging people to vote Liberal Democrat. And I think this is the kind of question, which is, you know, essentially, one of the things that will determine the result of this election is how big a chunk do the Lib Dems take out of a Labour vote. A lot of the Tory strategy for winning seats requires the Tories basically standing still, but then the Lib Dems taking a chunk out of the Labour Remain vote and that allowing the Tories to come out on top.
I thought one of the interesting things from the launch today was Jeremy Corbyn talking about how Boris Johnson wants to suggest that Brexit is being blocked by the establishment, and saying that actually people need to realise that Conservatives are the establishment, you know, they are the elite. And I do think that fits into another strain we're going to see from Labour over the coming weeks, which is there is a view amongst Corbyn allies that where they did well last time around was the fact that they offered change and a more radical manifesto. It was popular, but more radical manifesto than what the Conservatives were organising or were putting forward. And they think they have to have a similar difference, you know, clear blue water between them and the Tories. Now, the Tories have moved towards Labour in terms of spending in some ways. You are seeing a focus on funding for public services. So I think that, again, you are going to see Labour trying to show that actually we are the radicals. And because of the way the Tories have moved, I think that means Labour are going to move further out there. So you saw glimpses of it at a Labour conference. Now, the idea of banning private schools, this wasn't something that was put forward by Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell completely. In fact, I think they tried to water it down. But it'll be interesting what parts of these things, such as, you know, the four-day working week, which was another thing that was proposed, and also, you know, what they are going to do about, you know, the Green New Deal and getting net emissions, what part of those make it into the manifesto? Because I understand they do want to be able to say, we are the radicals, and Boris Johnson and his Vote Leave comrades might want to suggest they're the radicals, but actually, if you want a radical party, we are. So I think we might have a bit of a radical off.
Radical, brilliant. And James, you touched on PACs on the Remain side of the electorate, but we've also seen some movement possibly on the Brexit side, with the Brexit party, Nigel Farage in particular, being particularly quiet about whether or not they're going to team up with the Tories and work with them to sort of not stand in different seats against them. I guess if they do pull off a pact with the Tories or agree to not stand in certain seats, how much of an impact will that have on the election, do you think?
Well, I think that I personally think Nigel Farage is not keen on this pact with the Tories idea. If you look at his tweets today, he's attacking the fact that we haven't left on October the 31st, saying the Tories have failed Brexit voters again. I mean, there is clearly a split within the Brexit Party. There are a bunch of Brexit Party MEPs who clearly don't want to stand against the Tories, or don't want the party to stand against the Tories. I mean, there are some Brexit Party donors who take the same view. So I think this is a question of, you know, where does Farage win out in the argument? But I also think that, I don't think Boris Johnson is going to be particularly inclined to do a deal with them, partly because he has always thought that you use as much water out of the other side of the bath as you get in. Secondly, the Tories think that in quite a few seats, the Brexit Party actually helped them rather than hurt them. I was having a drink the other night with a Tory cabinet minister who basically took the view that, you know, was rattling off a list of seats where the Tory Party would need the Brexit Party to siphon off some Labour votes to have a chance. Because there is a feeling that there are some places where basically some of the Labour vote would not vote Tory, but might vote Brexit Party, which would allow the Tories to come through and win. And then I think the third reason is, you know, it's just one poll, but the Tory Party do appear to be quite successfully squeezing the Brexit Party. In the latest Ipsos Mori poll out in the Standard today, the Brexit Party are down to 7%. Now, why is that important? Because the CCHQ view has always been that once the Brexit Party gets down to about that number, it hurts Labour more than it hurts the Tories. It's taking more votes off Labour than the Tories. So, I mean, that is the dynamic. I mean, the big question now is whether Farage, you know, I don't think Farage wants to step back. I think it's an election. He wants his bit in the spotlight. But I think there are, I don't think he will, it doesn't, so famous last words, but right now it doesn't look like it's going to be quite the moment. And also, today is the 31st of October. This is the day when Boris Johnson said the UK would leave the EU. And I don't get the sense so far that there's a kind of dramatic, I think it is already baked in that we are not leaving today. I don't think there are lots of people wandering around expecting us to leave at midnight tonight. So we wait and see. But I think right now, I think the Tory party feel more confident about the Brexit party and their ability to handle them than they have in quite some time.
I mean, on the flip side, Kate, there are some seats, aren't there, where there is a risk that the Brexit party could split the Leave vote and allow Labour to come up through the middle instead.
Yes, and if you look at recent by-elections, I think that you can quite clearly see that working and why it should worry the Conservative Party, because both in Brecon and Radnorshire and in Peterborough, the Brexit Party share of the vote did seem not to help the Tory Party, but instead to allow, in one case, Labour and the other Liberal Democrats to get through, not really, you know, especially in the case of Peterborough, by increasing their vote share. I don't think Labour did increase their vote share in Peterborough, but they managed to hold it because you had this this eating in of the vote. I think that if you see the reports in the Times and the Financial Times, where has 20 versus 20 seats potentially, which the Brexit party might instead go for. Some of the, oh, that could be good news for the Tories. I think that it very much depends what the seats are. I think the Tories would quite like the sense that they are going after, you know, almost those Conservative MPs who don't represent Brexit, you know, certain seats, you know, or Dominic Grieve, who wants to stand potentially as an independent. He went for his seat. But I think it would be difficult for the Tories if the 20 seats they decide to focus in on, and there's indications that they would be, are seats like Ashfield, because seats like Ashfield are ultimately crucial or quite significant to the Tory strategy of making up for losses elsewhere by picking up seats in the red wall, as I say in this week's magazine, but in the Midlands and the North. So if you have a situation where Bolsover and Ashfield, traditional Labour areas, where there does be a heavy Leave vote, which they could tap into, but the Brexit Party decided to focus in on those seats and not spread the resources across the country, I think you're actually into a worse situation for the Tory party than if they were actually just going for every seat.
It seems we've sort of got a bizarre situation where tactical voting on both sides could make things worse.
Turning, I'm making no predictions.
there's an interesting question. I was bumped into a cabinet minister on my way into Westminster this morning, and they were making this point, which is, you know, is this 83, where the Tories massively benefit from a split in the centre-centre-left vote between Labour and the SDP, and you get that with the Labour and the Lib Dems now? Or is this 97, when tactical voting massively exacerbates Tory losses? So, and I don't think anyone really knows the answer to that. That's kind of one of the things that makes this campaign so unpredictable.
And turning last of all to our current Parliament, which only has a few weeks, I guess, on the clock, there's been a surprising amount of MPs, it seems, announcing that they're not going to stand again at the next election. I think we're up to around 50 now. Katie, first of all, is this a particular high number, do you think, compared to previous sort of standing downs?
Look, it depends what you compare it to. I think I was looking at a figure last night, and ultimately, compared to 2017, the number stepping down is higher. But I think if you look at the stat from Philip Cowley, which is, you know, an average of 86 MPs stood down each general election between 1979 and 2015. At the time of him sharing this information, it's 53 for this parliament. So I think there could be more to come. I think that there are obviously various reasons for this. I don't think it's necessarily an abnormal number. I think there's been quite a lot of a focus on the fact that it does seem to be a lot of women doing that. And I think also that's partly because if you look at, I suppose, the letters or the comments explaining why MPs are making this decision not to seek re-election, one of the things that does seem to be coming up is abuse, strains it has. I mean, Nicky Morgan announced last night that she wouldn't be seeking re-election, which I think was surprising because she's recently returned to the cabinet. But she's talked about her family in that. But others, I think, like Heidi Allen, formerly of Change UK, has said that ultimately suggested it's a very hostile environment being an MP right now. I do think that It's very hard to put it down to one thing, however. And you also have figures such as David Lidington, who yesterday announced that he wouldn't be seeking re-election. I think Nick Hurd is one Conservative MP who won't be seeking re-election. And actually, if you step away from it, I do think specifically for the Conservative Party, and I think this happens with all new leaders, but Brexit has changed, you know, the makeup of the Tory party in terms of where it positions itself electorally. I do think that if you look at the Tory MPs who are deciding not to stand again, a high proportion of that group are what you might see as people who are in the One Nation caucus. I think Tory MPs who aren't particularly pro-Brexit, they're not pro-second referendumers, but I don't think they came in to talk about the EU. I don't think that was their calling when they decided to be an MP, and I don't think they necessarily feel that at home with some of the things coming from Number 10 now. But I think that it's just part of, in a way, part of politics, and that's a shift. I do think it does mean that if you look at the next parliament, there's going to be a lot of new MPs. I think that when it comes to the makeup in terms of the Conservative MPs, lots of them will be very pro-Brexit, because I think it's quite hard to get through the selection process now without saying that, you know, you at least be okay with no deal. So you are seeing a changing Tory party, and I think the next parliament will be green.
Abuse is obviously a problem. I think one of the things that makes it worse is there used to be some distance. I don't. I mean, A, there used to be less of it, but also the barriers to entry for abuse were higher. You know, someone had to bother to sit down and write a letter and post it to you. Now I think that people just sit and bash out threats to people on Twitter, and I think that makes it feel particularly unpleasant. And I remember one MP saying to me, one of the other things that, you know, makes it feel so unpleasant is if you have your phone in your bedroom, the threat is coming into your house. This isn't you turn up at your parliamentary office and your office staff look at you rather sheepishly and say, oh God, there's a horrible message today. This is something that is coming into your house, into your bedroom in real time. I mean, that makes it particularly unpleasant. I think as a country, we need to become a lot better at learning how to disagree without being disagreeable.
Mm. It's going to put off a lot of other candidates, I presume, Katie, from applying.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, I think the point has been made in various outlets that ultimately you'd have to be a pretty thick-skinned person to look at the current political situation and decide to go into it. But politicians have, you know, entered hostile environments previously. I think that specifically with the current one, though, I suspect that you are going to have a lot of people who feel very passionate about the EU one way or another, because to decide to go through this in terms of the abuse, but also just in terms of what you're up against and the fact that you could be heading to a parliament where there potentially is no majority, and we're about to, you know, another couple of years of emergency debates and so forth. I think you're going to have to very strongly about the issues, and I just don't think Brexit is going away, so that could be the focus.
Nothing will change. Brilliant. Thank you, Katie. Thank you, James, and thank you for listening. And if you like listening to Coffee House Shots, then you may be interested. We have a Coffee House Shots live event coming up taking place in Westminster on the 12th of November at 7 p.m. We have James Forsyth, Katie Balls, Fraser Nelson, Isabel Hardman and Matthew Goodwin discussing all that's going on in Westminster. To check out the event, go to spectator.co.uk/live-shots.